Leslie meets farmer's wife, the Reverend Jill Haylock, and finds out about her journey in becoming an ordained priest.
Hello, I'm Leslie. While life as a country vicar can sound idyllic, just imagine the scene of a traditional village fete with homemade cakes and the sound of laughter. The truth can sometimes be very different as ministers in smaller communities struggle with declining congregations, financial problems, and cultural changes, not to mention looking after historic buildings. Today, I'm talking to my friend and neighbour Jill, who in her official role is the Reverend Jill Haylock. Jill was ordained in 2016 and is an associate priest in the Chet Valley Benefice. Jill, good afternoon.
Hello.
What led you to become a member of the clergy?
Well, I think having attended a village church and involved with things in the parishes, such as children's activities and visiting elderly people sometimes, then it was around 2005 and I was asked the question, have you ever thought of being ordained? And at that time, I was rather stunned, shocked actually, and being very busy with my family and the farm business, I dismissed that. And then, to my surprise, about a year later, somebody else asked me the same question.
Oh, wow.
And so I thought, I really should think about this. Why are they asking me, you know?
Well, you the role sits very naturally on you. I think you were meant to be.
Thank you.
So could you tell me, what was the training process? Was it a very long process and what did it involve?
Yes, in the first place, there's a long period of discernment, really. And so I talked to my vicar about this and he suggested attending a life calling event, which runs two or three times a year in the Church of England. And people are invited to just come along and listen to what the different roles entail. Okay. And there are various pathways, for instance, chaplaincy or being a reader or being a vicar. And so I came home and, as you can imagine, my head was full of all sorts of stuff, ideas tumbling and should I this, should I that, should I really go forward for it, you know? All of those things. And also my name had to be put forward to the church councils because everybody had to agree that they actually wanted me to do this.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
It involves so much more than people realise, doesn't it?
That's right, yes. And so thankfully I was put forward and then it was lots more conversations with people. And after that I had to go what I call a three-day grilling, to be interviewed by three different people who were prominent in the church, bishop advisors, and they had nine discerning categories to pass before I was even considered to be suitable.
Wow!
Yes. And so I was not sure what they would say. I was really worried, thinking, it's no good, don't even think about it, you know, they won't want you doing this. But to my surprise, the bishop rang me and he said, Jill, I'm very pleased to tell you you've been accepted for training.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and I was quite bowled over by that.
I can imagine. I had absolutely no idea it was quite such an involved process and you had to go through so much.
Which is good, really, when you think about it.
Well, yeah.
You know, to discern all kinds of different things and to see what you're really made of and, you know, what your ideas are, what your faith is, your faith journey's like, and so on. And so so then I began a three-year training course at the Eastern Region Ministry course, which was absolutely fantastic. I learnt so much. It was so interesting with other people training alongside. Some even came from Europe, the Diocese of Europe, which was lovely meeting so many people from different places, you know, and different traditions, really.
I can imagine the 3 years just flew by.
Oh, it did. Yes, it did. It really did. Fitting it all in was quite hard. I wasn't... I'd I've not written an essay since I was 15. So doing 3,000 words, you know, and knowing how to do that and making the most of putting in there what you really felt and what you'd learnt was quite a difficult thing for me, actually. But got through that. And then after that, after passing all the modules, I was invited for ministry training in the parishes, which is practical training.
Okay.
And so that was lovely, really, to be with the people here and learning alongside the vicar and giving, you know, how can I put it?
I guess it really brings it all to life, doesn't it?
Yes, it brings it to life.
Gives it a meaning.
It really does. Yes, it really does. And of course, sometimes you're out of your comfort zone, but once you've stepped into that place and done it once, then you build on that, you know. So it's really lovely. And so that was for another 3 years. And and then you have to have another meeting with the bishop and those involved to say, you know, do we want you to be ordained and to really take on the official role of priest in the parishes?
Well, you got through that. So what's your favourite part of the job?
Well, I really think my favourite part is being alongside people, just being there in the parishes and involved in their daily lives sometimes, whether it's young people or older people, and where there's need, and in the parish, just trying to build community and, you know, friends and neighbours, which is good. And the other thing I really love, actually, is leading the services in the parishes, but my favourite is the Holy Communion service. That's absolutely a privilege to do that.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what has been the biggest challenge that you've had to face so far after being ordained?
My biggest challenge, I think, was taking a funeral for one of my closer friends. That was a challenge, but having to be strong for the people there and to honour my friend's life in that way, and of course remembering her and helping the family to deal with that situation. It was such a privilege, but quite tough.
I can imagine it was, but they probably didn't want anybody else but you to actually perform the service, so it probably was quite a compliment. Mm. Can you give me an insight into an average day for you? I can imagine you don't have an average day at all, but try.
Well, after breakfast, we meet 6 days a week for morning prayer, which is the daily office that we are encouraged to say with the other members of clergy. It's not compulsory, but most of us meet together to do that. And I usually go when I can, because sometimes family or farm business sort of crops up and, you know, I can't always make it, but I do go whenever I can. And I really have found that that is a wonderful thing to do that at the beginning of the day. It really sets the scene for the day, knowing that you're doing God's work in the parishes, and it reminds you of the support and the real confidence you have in that, in those words. And so that's the first thing. And then I may have a meeting with clergy or a meeting with somebody, perhaps planning a funeral or some other event. Social events, of course, are important as well, so we have those to deal with. And or it may be somebody has phoned with a query and I need to go to the church office to help them with that. Planning services, of course, and sermons. Then the friends and neighbours group, the group for bereaved people that we have once a month.
Yes.
That's another thing that's quite involved. We usually meet together for lunch or afternoon tea and some entertainment, either a speaker or demonstrator or something, which is which is lovely for them. They really look forward to coming. And so that's in the lecture hall in Loddon once a month. There's planning that and various things, obviously, with family and having grandchildren if I'm needed to, or helping Don on the farm. It just depends. It's very, very varied, but it makes life interesting, well, doesn't
absolutely
it?
Absolutely, it does. And if the phone goes with an unanticipated request or problem, do you just drop what you're doing? If you're in a meeting, do you just drop what you're doing and go and help? I suppose it depends on what the request is, but
yes.
Does it quite often happen to you that...
Occasionally, I would say. Yes, occasionally. And as you say, sometimes you can't just drop everything, but definitely to have a conversation if you can and listen. I find listening is so important.
Mm.
And to understand what the situation is, what the person needs, what's happening, and then hopefully to be able to meet fairly soon after that and to go and sit with them, be with them, and to find out what's going on. Perhaps if somebody has died suddenly, it is a matter of listening to them and helping them in whatever way you can, the best way you can.
Mm.
And or it might be another incident, perhaps a shocking incident that's happened in a family or even in the church, and people want to get together and say, how can we get through this? You know, what are we going to do? And it's always good to pray as well.
Yeah.
To pray and to do that together, and knowing that we have the strength of our faith and hope and trust and those important things.
Okay. So, is being a local farmer's wife a help or a hindrance? And I know, John. Led you into that one, haven't I?
Well, do you know, actually, I think it's been a help because, for one thing, as I was saying, you know, with such a varied day, such a varied week, such a varied life, I was brought up on a farm, and so I used to work with my father as well. And you never knew what each day would bring.
Mm.
And so to be ready to be very flexible, adapt, you know, to what you need to do. And in that way, it's been a really good training, actually. And also to have that sense of you need to do what you need to do, prioritise and get things done. It's like an attitude you have, you know, as a farmer's wife.
Yes.
You kind of have to be ready.
Yeah.
And those kind of things, really. But having John's support has been amazing.
Yeah. You have it's a very just, supportive family, don't you?
Yes, yes. He's been very patient with me, I must admit, because being a farmer's wife is a job in itself. But he knows that it's just broadened out my life and I love to serve in the community. And so he's very supportive of that as well.
That's good. And finally, what do you see as the main areas of priority for smaller parishes in the future?
I think we need to try and care for each other as in the best way we can, to see the needs and to be supportive of each other. With a small parish like this, I think... the church is important because it's a place to get together and obviously to worship and praise God, and the festivals are really popular. Getting together for Easter and harvest festivals and Christmas, but also the Sunday worship is very important for some. And even though we have small congregation here, it's very important to them. And the church, obviously, is a very special place. Having, when you walk in, you know that people have prayed there and worshipped there for thousands of years, not just a few hundred, thousands of years. And it gives you a sense of awe and just a place of God's presence. And it's always good to tell the story of your own church as well, so that people know why it's been important in the generations before, you know. And in community, caring for each other in that way. And always inviting people. I think invitation is such a good thing. to let people know that the church is there, and this particular church in a very rural place is definitely a place of peace, a place of contemplation, and a place to reflect. I think in today's world we're all so busy, aren't we, dashing about here, there and everywhere, and it's offering a place to actually come and stop and be still and just think about what's really important.
And Cicilline Church is absolutely lovely and well worth a visit. Jill, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Leslie was speaking to the Reverend Jill Haylock.